So congratulations, all of you graduates. I also just want to say, in case you missed it when we first came in, we have a couple of guests who are with us, and I'll say even a little bit more later, but we've got Andrew and Darnell, and so both of them are affiliated with the Fellowship of Affirming Ministries, which is the umbrella organization that we joined actually officially just last year, although we've been connecting with them, I think, since 2018. So that's an organization of churches that are made up from all different denominations. They are all of them 100% affirming, so welcoming of the LGBTQ plus community, led by Bishop Yvette Flender. So you probably recognize her name because we pray for her every week. So Andrew has actually been playing in Bishop Flender's church for I don't know how many years, 8 years, something like that. So Andrew is very good. And he was on his way over to Yale to go and do their master's program in sacred music or something close to that. So he's driving across the country, and he is friends with Darnell, who has his doctorate in ministry, but he didn't want me to mention that, I think. He's up in Flint. And he has his own ministry that he's going to share about with us a little bit later. And he's affiliated with TFAM, so I know Andrew was driving through, and he's like, I'm just going to do some concerts with my friends so we can help raise money and awareness for his thing, but also just connect us with some other TFAM people, because there aren't very many in Southeast Michigan. So I feel really thrilled to have you here. I just hope you feel really blessed, connected. And we'll do a little bit more here after I talk. I'll preach short today here. So, you know, we've been in this sermon series, and we're unpacking a concept called original blessing. And so original blessing is a bit of a counterpoint to this Western Christian concept of original sin, right? So we had talked about how original sin teaches that humans are by nature evil, separated from God at birth. That is a very common, especially Western Protestant teaching. But that belief was not part of the earliest expressions of Christianity. It's not in any of the major creeds. When the Eastern Church broke off from the Western Church way back in 1054, the Eastern Churches rejected this idea that humans are inherently evil, and they continue to reject that. Our Jewish friends reject it. It's not something that would have been part of Jesus' teachings or anything that he would have known. So original blessing is sort of the counterpoint conversation to that. And original blessing says humans are born beloved of God, made in God's image, meant to reflect the love and the goodness of God on earth, albeit with the capacity to do good or evil, sometimes great evil, but that our inherent nature isn't tainted by default. So when we talk about original blessing, I think it sometimes begs the question, I know it has from some of you, because we've talked about, like, well, what does that mean about sin and evil? How do we talk about evil? Because it clearly exists in the world. And so we're going to spend a couple, 3 weeks unpacking that a little bit. Next Sunday, we're in the park, so not that Sunday, but a couple after that. Today, I just want to start us talking about a metaphor in the Bible. And it's a metaphor that talks about a personified creature that shows up early on in Genesis. And this creature is called Rabisu, the crouching predator. So the only time that this creature shows up is an inference in Genesis chapter 4. But that inference sets up an archetype that has been used a whole lot in the Bible, and I think it actually helps us better understand some of the stories that are included that might seem just a little bit odd. So in this first scene where we see Rabisu, it's part of a story that most of us probably know, a story about two brothers named Cain and Abel. Right? And so Cain and Abel had just made offerings to God, and we're told that God regarded Abel's offering and did not regard Cain's offering. And so Cain, I think somebody might need in the back here. Maybe pop him back. Good, thanks. And so we're told that Cain noticed that God was not noticing his offering. And it says that his face fell into a scowl. So this is Genesis 4, 6 to 7. God asks Cain, he says, why are you incensed? Why is your face fallen? For whether you offer well or whether you don't, at the tent flap, sin crouches, and for you it is longing, but you must rule over it. Right, so it's kind of an interesting phrase, at the tent flap, sin crouches. That Hebrew word that is used there for crouches or for lurks It's believed to have been borrowed from the Akkadian people, and it is a word that describes a vampiric demon named Rabisu, who was believed to crouch in the entryways of people's homes, like ready to attack and sort of menacing people. Now, when I was thinking about that this week, it made me think about our cat. So Rachel and I have a cat. My last name's Swan, so his name is Obi-Swan Kenobi. And he's had a rough couple of weeks, but this is one of the reasons. So about 2 weeks ago, I was writing in my living room, and all of a sudden, I hear some crows just like cawing super loudly in our front yard. Just caw, caw. And I was just kind of tuning it out, but then we have a neighbor across the way, Blair, who is always keeping an eye on the neighborhood. So she texts us when she sees things out of line. You know, your trash is out on the wrong day, that kind of thing. So Blair texts me and she's like, you know those crows are after your cat, right? And I was like, oh no. So I let him in, he comes tearing in the house, he's really scared, and I was like, oh no, what's happening? Well, then it keeps happening, like multiple times a day. These crows are chasing him into the front yard and just cawing at him. So I was talking with my small group. We have a book group that meets, and I was telling them about this, and they're like, oh, don't you know about crows? And I was like, what? They're like, oh, crows are relentless. Like, if Obi went near their nest or threatened their young at all, like, they will mark him for life. They will not only follow him and harass him, but they will tell their friends to do the same thing. And so now poor Obi, like, cannot be seen in the neighborhood, essentially. It's like he opens the door and he kind of looks around like, oh gosh, are they out there? Are they stalking me? Even one day, so usually when I call him, he comes, which is really cute. So we've got an alley behind our house. I go out and I call him, and then pretty soon I hear the crows cawing, and I was like, oh no, they see him in the alley running home. And I look around, and sure enough, he's like, Mom! Oh my gosh. So that's what it made me think of when I think of like an animal crouched outside your house, ready to pounce, right? At the tent flap, sin crouches. For you it is longing, but you must rule over it. I don't know if Obi's going to rule over this, but... All right, so we've got crows are a little bit like this lurking vampire demon. This bit in Genesis seems to mean that God is saying something to Cain like, look, I know that you're toying with this idea of taking out your anger and your jealousy on your brother, but this temptation to do evil... It's like that vampire demon Rabisu. It is lurking in the corners of your mind. It's waiting to pounce on you and to suck the life out of you and people who care about you. You've got to rule over it. But Cain does not manage to rule over this temptation, and we know he murders his brother. And so from that, I think we're to understand that Rabisu overtook Cain. So this strange little image here, it comes in the context of stories that are wrestling with what it means to be human. Right, the beginning of Genesis, it's poetry, it's epic poetic narrative. It's asking questions like, is human freedom a gift or a curse? What is our human role in creation, and can we live up to it? Right, so we're told that in the beginning, God created humans to be caretakers of the plants and the animals on the earth. And while I don't read it as humans being like over the rest of creation, I see us as being very much part of it. We're to understand, I think, that our giftings are such that we're the most intelligent of these created beings, at least in the way that we can understand the big systems. We might learn otherwise later. But we're made in God's likeness. We're told that God entrusted these humans, right, with living in harmony with themselves and others and God and the creation. They were meant to live in harmony with tilling and caring for the earth and naming the animals and partnering with God for taking care of the world around them, right? They were priests in this earth temple of God. That was who they were made to be. But instead of imitating this loving care of their creator, they instead imitated a beast, right? Sometimes depicted as a snake, but they turned their attention and imitated that beast instead. And in doing that, they lost their capacity to justly take care of the world. And so at that point, that left them cursed to like have the animals and the land sort of rule over them, and they would struggle to produce food. So then comes along this story about Cain and his brother, right? This is sort of the next generation. And the question the Bible seems to be asking is, well, could Cain, or could this next generation, could Cain be this kind of human who could be trusted to care for himself and the people around him, right? Could he regain this mandate of original blessing that his parents, Adam and Eve, the archetypal humans, they lost sight of that? Could the next generation pick that up? Like, I don't think this is like a curse for all time. It's a question for all of us. The answer in this case was no, right? He murders his brother. God says, where is your brother? And we all know Cain says, am I my brother's keeper? Right? And I think in that, it's telling us he had a choice and he chose poorly. Right? I'll date myself a little bit. It's like that Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade, you know, with the cup of eternal life. He chose poorly. It's a weird scene, but I loved it as a kid. right? So he was making a choice of things that led to his own misery, right? It led to the misery of his family, because sin, we know, often has communal implications. It affects more than just us. But I think that the text is also offering us a choice as the readers and the listeners of it. It's, are we able to pick up this mandate of original blessing? Can we be trusted to care for ourselves and the people around us? And the temptation not to is always lurking at our door, waiting to suck the life out of us. But if we remember who we are, right, if we remember this blessing and this mandate that we have, we can overcome sin and we can live out our calling to be stewards of creation, image bearers of love in our relationships and in our communities. So this story here with the crouching vampire demon, it sets up this archetype for how to read some of the other Bible stories, right? So when you read a story about a human, either like living in harmony with animals or nature or overcoming them, that human is usually meant to be heroic or godly, or you might use the word righteous, not self-righteous, but like righteous. We can be righteous. We can live righteously. When we read a story where animals overtake the protagonist, usually those characters are doing something that maybe they shouldn't be doing, right? So humans living in harmony tends to symbolize goodness. Humans being dominated by animals tends to symbolize sin. And once you see that, a bunch of kind of stranger stories make some sense, and I think they can help us get to the questions that they're actually asking. So I want to give you just an example here of an odd story. And I think I've only preached on it once, but like, it's hard to preach on. It's literally 3 verses long. It'll leave you feeling a little bit like, what is happening? This is about the prophet Elisha. He's walking on a road between Jericho and Bethel. This is in 2 Kings. From there, Elisha went up to Bethel. And as he was walking along the road, some boys came out of the town and they jeered at him. Get out of here, Baldy, they said. Get out of here, Baldy. And he turned around and he looked at them and he calls down a curse on them in the name of the Lord. And then 2 bears come out of the woods and they maul 42 of the boys. And then he went on to Mount Carmel and from there returned to Samaria. End of story. What? We're not teaching that in Sunday school, just so you know, right? We're like, what is going on here? This great prophet of God is cursing children for making fun of him. And then the bears. Well, I mean, not to be too morbid, but like, if you even think about what that would look like 42 kids, 2 bears, like some of the kids would get away. How many kids? I mean, it's ridiculous, right? It's not actually meant to be what it is. I think we would ask the question too of like, how is it not a sin that this prophet calls down a curse on kids? Right? And if God is good, why are these things killing innocents? I know if I cursed the kids here, probably most of you wouldn't come back, and you shouldn't. That'd be weird. But what I think the point of the story is that Elisha is a righteous man. That's what I think it's trying to tell us using this archetype. This is right after his mentor, Elijah, was taken up into heaven. And so these questions are like, I mean, is he going to have the goods? Is he going to be righteous enough? And I think the story is meant to tell us, yeah, this is a guy who is not overcome by this sort of more primal part of the creation or himself. The bears don't get him. But rather, the kids in the story are overcome because they made fun of this man for something that he can't help, right? He's bald. Bald is beautiful. Love bald, right? But making fun of people, I think, it's what it's telling us is that is like being overcome by this more ferocious part of ourselves. And we have to rule over it or it'll rule over us. There's another weird story. It's in the book of Daniel. It's about an evil king named Nebuchadnezzar. And so Nebuchadnezzar has several dreams. And one of them, he dreams about a great big tree. And that tree gets cut down to a stump. And then that stump, we're told, becomes a human. And then it has the mind of an animal for 7 years. So if you're following, it's like a stump person with an animal mind. And this sort of human slash animal goes outside and lives among other wild animals in the dream. And so he has Daniel in, and Daniel is interpreting this dream, and he says, okay, Nebuchadnezzar, this is actually you. You've grown up big and tall and strong, but pretty soon you're going to be cut off from power, and then you are going to go off and become more like an animal. And the text says this. It says, Nebuchadnezzar was driven away from human society. He ate grass like oxen. His body was bathed with the dew of heaven until his hair grew as long as the eagle's feathers. His nails became like bird claws. Right? So we're being told here that his evil ways were going to make him more like an animal than a human. Right? His hair is feathers. His nails are talons. He's like an inhumane predator is the metaphor. Now, I just want to make a little note. I have a little bit of an aversion to talking about humans as being more or less human because I think that can lead us into some really dicey territory. And so I would just make that note, like as a modern person, that would not be sort of my inclination. But I think as we approach this ancient text, I think that is part of how we are to read this. Does that make sense? So if we can kind of hold both of those in tension. The readings of other stories that involve humans and animals also lean toward this being a helpful interpretation. So other Bible characters who are overcome by beasts include like Jonah, right? Swallowed by a whale. Why? He was supposed to go tell some people to like stop living out of their like evil ways and like return to like an original blessing. There's a God who loves you. Live out your best self. And he's like, no. Whale takes him, right? So we're meant to be told that like, oh, maybe that wasn't sort of the righteous posture to take toward others. Guy named Balaam who couldn't control his talking donkey. Because his heart, he was trusting himself more than God, and so his donkey just sits down and starts talking to him. And then you've got ones like the story of Pharaoh, right, who's over Egypt and who is partaking in and overseeing much larger systemic sinful issues, right? There's slavery, there's oppression of people. He gets overcome by locusts and frogs and such, right? And none of these characters are heroic, at least in these moments. But on the other hand, we've got a few humans who are meant to be portrayed more or less as humans. They're ruling over the beasts, right? So a few generations from Cain, we've got Noah, who was living with two of every kind of animal. We've got King David, who we're told slayed lions and bears to protect sheep, right? And so I think that's meant to be like, so what is it about that that's righteous? And I think it's just this idea that David was trying to protect the vulnerable from predators or from people who would be harmful to them. We have Daniel who sat peacefully with a hungry lion in a lion's den. So with Daniel, you know, he's sort of facing up to a much larger empire that was trying to force him to give up his own faith and to confess another faith. And maybe I've got a little bit of a, like an American interpretation going on here, but I mean, it's a little bit like he was kind of standing for freedom of religion and for not having to have compelled speech. Right? And for that, he was thrown into a lion's den, and it said that he lived peacefully with the lion because what he was doing was righteous. Right? Are we kind of getting this general metaphor that's going on? There's parts of us that want to make selfish choices, but when we give into those, it's like being overcome by this baser side rather than our made in the image of God side. And I think if we recognize this metaphor, it can help us read the Bible more carefully. I think in the stories, we can ask questions like, are there animals? Are there other symbols of nature? What's happening with those animals? Who's being harmed? Is anybody living in peace with them? And I think it's not trying to lay down like a set of rules about sin, right? Like there's a few of them. We've got like the Ten Commandments, things that are generally considered sin throughout for most people in most places and times. Don't murder, don't steal, don't covet your neighbor's things. Those are pretty universal. But sometimes sin can be a little bit more contextual. And so I feel like with the Bible, what it's inviting us to do is learn how to think ethically, right? And so it's teaching us to interact with the text and to ask questions of the text so that we can learn how to be wise. Because as we know, a lot of things are not black and white. We have to learn how to think with very complex ethical situations. So I'm just going to wrap up this morning by saying that I think a helpful part of original blessing is how it leads us to understand our relationship to sin. I think it's a more positive framework to talk about it, right? It's not just like, well, you're awful. So stop being the awful person that you're destined to be. You need to just beg God for mercy your whole life. Like in my upbringing, it was like, you better pray and ask for forgiveness every single night or bad things might happen, right? It's I think, teaching us a little more positive framework of like, more like, this isn't who you are, right? You're making choices that are bringing misery to you and to people around you, but that's not who you are at heart. You are made to be kind and just and good, right? You're created to be brave and to have courage and to be generous and to be loving. You're made in the likeness of the Creator. You carry a piece of the divine inside of you. And because you carry that, be humble about it. Love mercy, trust God, trust that God loves you and that you're meant to be a light in this world. Seek true and lasting justice, be radically hospitable, because when you're not who you're meant to be, it harms you, right? I mean, it's not about hurting God's feelings, although I do think it makes God sad when we're not who we're supposed to be, but like staying away from sinful things is about helping us live the best life that we're meant to live. It calls us to be our best selves and to live with integrity. And so I know that Darnell ascribes to a very similar view. I'm going to transition us a little bit here. I was already going to preach on this topic today, but so Andrew had reached out to me, maybe like a week and a half ago. So this was kind of quick, but I was looking at Darnell's website at this Micro Missions, and I looked at a video that he made. And as he was talking on the video, I was like, oh man, you're just talking out of original blessing. I'm going to quote it. I told him I'd do this. He said, "I believe in the power of ordinary people. I believe in the inherent goodness of all humanity. I believe in the spirit of generosity and doing well. I believe doing good is a reflection of human godliness." Right? Amen. That's a good summary. Humans can be terrible. They can also be unbelievably amazing. And so I want to welcome an amazing human being here. And Darnell is going to come and talk to us about Micro Missions, a little about himself. And also, I just want to let you know, then I'm going to come up. We'll have a chance. If you would like to donate to Micro Missions, you can do that. Do not feel pressure, but you're welcome to do it. I'll tell you how. And then Darnell and Andrew are going to lead Darnell in a solo. And then later on, they're going to help lead the worship. So, without
First of
further
all,
ado.
Wow. I am absolutely overwhelmed and blessed just to be here. My God, thank you, Pastor Emily. I've never been quoted like that before. Thank you. I'm just like... And I must say, that's a part of my affirmation of faith. Over my journey and formation, I had to develop my own. And that became a part of my affirmation of faith. I wrote a few words down, and I'll just try to stick to the script. The word micro doesn't mean small. It means very, very small. I started Micro Missions in 2019 as a way to transform very small donations into a huge impact, things that move the needle for real people. In 2020, it became a part of my doctoral program at the Pacific School of Religion, where I was studying about international missions. I had already been doing it, but I wanted to do it better and understand more about it. And since 2021, we have shifted more than $50,000 of Western wealth directly into the deepest pockets of what I call the subterranean, that is well below the grassroots level, into the pockets of real people whose names I can give you, and they've shared their bios on our website. Since January 2022, we send about $350 each week. And I don't have the support of a church. We don't have the support of a foundation or anything. It's just come from human people, being good human people. So I really do believe in the spirit of goodness. And I'll say that again, the word micro doesn't mean micro, small. It means very, 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 very tiny. There's a guy, he told me, he sent me a Facebook post. He said, "I'm gonna cash app you $10, but I don't know what, that's all I have. I don't know how much that will do." But just like the widow's mite, he gave his $10. And I let him know that $10 will help Joffrey, who is a person I know. He lives in the slum area. It will help him have electricity for a whole month. $10. $20 will help the widow, Sarah, who lives in an earthen home, a home made of earth, like mud. It'll help her have food for 3 weeks for her family. $20. So it's a way of shifting Western wealth in a way that anybody can do. Anybody can do. So more so than just the financial thing, what you're really giving is hope. That is the impact that you give, because when someone understands, I can actually eat today and I haven't ate yesterday, I didn't eat yesterday, or I didn't, you know, I have money for my, it's $75 to send a child to school for a whole semester. Can you imagine? $75 for a whole semester. Last year we did that for 150 children because of the power of people. So I thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for the opportunity to connect with TFAM right here in my own state. Lord, I've been waiting for this for a long time. I started my journey with Bishop Flunder back in 1995, and in 99 I ended up having to come back here to Michigan and finish my program here, and I stayed for a master's, and then I went a few places, but there was no TFAM presence, and I am so grateful. So thank you for having us. We're going to sing a little song. We hope that it will bless someone.
If you want to give, we've got there's a QR code on the back. I think that just sends you to our regular giving site, but one of the drop downs, we'll leave it on for a week. So if that's something that you'd like to support, we'd invite you to do that. And I think also, Darnell, you didn't mention, but you also went to U of M for voice, right?
Yes.
U of M vocal grad. All right.
We won't be singing an aria today, though.
Greatest song.